Drones are at least two things, a huge problem if you look at it one way, and a huge technological advancement seen another. The problem lies in the new ground they're breaking and how their use should be governed, if at all. The advancements are practically countless. One good use of drones is in journalism, and an Illinois State University School of Communication videographer has studied this very topic and has released a documentary called God's Eye News, The Use of Drones in Journalism. It's being screened tonight at the Normal Theater. Bob Carroll is that educator. He joins us today. Welcome, Bob.
Thanks.
When did you first become fascinated with drones?
It really wasn't that long ago. It was a couple of years ago. I saw some YouTube videos where people were using drones, and I thought, wow, that's awesome. How do they do that?
Were these drones being used in a journalistic way, or for what reason?
No, extreme sports. They were, you know, cliff diving and stuff like that.
And they're used now. Realtors use them. So they are being implemented in the business world anyway.
Yes, but I think a lot of that is outside of the law.
Your documentary opens with a detailed look at how the technology was used to cover the Washington-Illinois tornado in November 2013. Let's play a clip from that.
You can see the entire path of the tornado and hundreds of destroyed houses. Being able to see both up close people's houses, you know, destroyed, and being able to see right into their bathroom or what used to be their bathroom or bedroom, and then as you ascend, the shattered frames just look like spilled matches, you know, or toothpicks. So it's definitely, you know, hits home. You realize those are people's homes and that those are their lives all over the place. So definitely, yeah, emotional.
Now, what's interesting about that clip is that it was not a journalist talking. That was Josh Lilly, a hobbyist. Journalists are still not allowed to operate drones. Why is that?
Well, because hobbyists are not regulated right now, and anything commercial is regulated. So anyone who's making money off of it is prohibited, with some exceptions where you can jump through legal hoops and get a one-day permit to go shoot something.
What would be an exception, a one-day exception?
One of the guys that I interviewed in the documentary, Colin Hinkle, is doing that. He applied, first of all, to get the okay. You have to get the drone certified and get it registered and get numbers on it and everything like that. But then you have to apply on a case-by-case basis of, can I take this up and use it?
Do drones just make a journalist's job easier? Does it actually provide for new, better, and exciting content?
Oh, new and better and exciting content. And, you know, it was interesting just listening to the stuff Josh Lilly was talking about without seeing the video. No, not nearly the impact. It's over radio. It's hard to see what drone video looks like.
Obviously, in your documentary, you can get a good look at it. Maybe you can just describe a little bit about what the viewer sees when they watch that.
Majestic is a word that comes to mind. You know, you think about the opening scene of Sound of Music with Julie Andrews spinning on the mountaintop, and you know, everyone sees that, and how just breathtaking that view is. That's what all this drone video is.
And that was shot as a helicopter. Obviously, we're talking about 50 years ago.
Yeah.
A helicopter. So you have sound issues when you have a helicopter, other things too, right?
Right, yeah. They just, you know, but you have the sound issues with the drones too. You've got to replace the audio or just take the audio out in most cases with the drones.
One advantage of using drones over helicopters or airplanes, of course, is the cost of conventional air traffic. It can really be astronomical. What kind of cost are we talking about with professional drones if they're used in journalism?
Pretty minimal. Less than, for most of the drones that you see that are capturing video, it's less than the cost of a regular professional news camera. Whereas the helicopter, not the cost of buying it, but the cost of maintaining it over the course of a year. Studies are showing that that's upwards of $1 million a year, you know, versus $2,000 for the cost of a drone and batteries for a year or whatever.
So what does a drone cost? But you're also talking about licensing, permitting, things like that, that we don't really know yet what's going to be involved, but there'll be some cost included in that too. What are the other costs?
Really just someone to operate it. And, you know, it sounds like from what the FAA proposals were, it sounds like the cost of permits and stuff like that is going to be relatively inexpensive. You know, we're talking hundreds of dollars versus thousands or hundreds of thousands or something like that.
And the actual drones themselves, what do they cost? I imagine maybe less so now than they were when this whole process started a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, they're dropping, and we're seeing things, modifications to make them better, stronger, faster, you know, the bionic man sort of thing. But the entry level, that's one of the issues of drones is that everything about them is so varied. You can buy drones for $30, but you can buy higher-end drones that are going to shoot decent video for a couple thousand. And then you run into, like, the Predator and stuff like that that cost millions, and obviously a person couldn't buy that. But
yeah, so these small drones you're talking about that cost $30, what's the difference between that and a model airplane, say?
Well, with any of these small drones, even the ones that cost a couple thousand dollars, there's not any difference between this and some model aircraft.
From the way they're operated.
Right. The fixed wing airplanes move faster, so they're more dangerous in that way. Those are regulated exactly. Those are drones. Anything that's an unmanned aerial vehicle is considered a drone. And unmanned aerial vehicle is the way that the FAA refers to these things.
So these model airplanes and anything like it will fall under the same rules once the FAA gets them established.
Correct.
ISU's Student Television Workshop has a drone. It's been in use for, I guess, more than a year or so now. Talk about the rules that govern drones for STW. Why is it allowed, say, to have a drone, but, say, TV-10 or something else on campus isn't allowed to have a drone?
The drone that STW owns is owned and purchased with student funds, and the students are hobbyists, and they're not using it for any commercial use, and they are not part of the government. TV-10, because it's funded and owned by Illinois State University, is a branch of government, and that's regulated. And the FAA has said that state-funded universities count as government and therefore can't use drones.
So what are some of the uses that students on campus have done with you? What are some of the things they're doing?
Really, they're just practicing. None of the drone video has been really used for any projects or anything like that. They fly it up, they crash it into a tree, then we fix it.
So let's talk about some of the issues at stake here, Bob. The First Amendment, is it being violated by drone restrictions for the media?
That's something I have never answered specifically. I'd like to leave that up to the viewers, but my inclination would be probably yes.
And what about privacy? How are drones changing how we think of our own personal privacy? Or maybe they haven't yet.
Oh, I think there's a lot of people who are worried about their privacy and how drones could invade it. And especially, and this is why the government agencies like ISU are not allowed to use drones because of Fourth Amendment rights and privacy. People are afraid that the government's going to be spying on them.
Is that fear misguided or well-founded, do you think?
It's interesting. I think we don't even see it because we're so close to it, but we've given up so many privacy rights. You know, I mean, to think that someone would have had been able to shoot video in a device that's in their pocket and take that into a bathroom, you know, and now we don't even think twice about where people are bringing cell phones and stuff like that.
So you see this as just an extension of that then?
I do. I think, you know, all technology, as technology advances. In the early days when Kodak made the Brownie.
What was the Brownie?
The Brownie was one of the first portable consumer cameras that anyone could use and buy. They were banned in places like beaches and stuff like that because, you know, ooh, someone's going to shoot me in my ankle-length swimsuit.
Because people weren't used to having, what they were used to was having people come in with a tripod and a fixed lighting source or something like that set up for basic photography. This kind of changed that, right?
Yeah. So every time technology changes, you know, the world adapts to it, and we willingly give up some privacy or we don't. And I think in most of these cases, there are so many consumers out here using drones right now that it's hard to put that genie back in the bottle.
A little over a year ago, the Federal Aviation Administration was supposed to have issued rules for use and operation of drones in business and elsewhere, such as journalism. What happened there and what's the status of that?
Well, they did issue recommendations for rules in January of 2015, so a little more than a year ago. And I still haven't seen any progress on that. Now, they did, right around Christmas time this year, do something that heads towards regulation, but it actually headed toward regulation of hobbyists, which I think is against the FAA Modernization Act of 2012. Congress pretty explicitly said in there that the FAA cannot regulate hobbyists.
So what are these recommendations that came out over a year ago? What kind of direction did they head?
Well, the regulations, interestingly, are mostly would put into law commercial regulations that would mirror the recommendations for hobbyists. So you can't fly higher than 400 feet. You can't fly closer to an airport than 5 miles. The one thing that's really a little different, and I think this one cripples a lot of companies like Amazon who want to use drones, is that the operator needs to maintain visual line of sight. So that means if Amazon's going to deliver packages with drones, the operator needs to follow that drone down the street.
Which kind of defeats the whole purpose of having the drone.
Absolutely.
So this sounds like it had kind of a chilling effect on the drone industry, maybe.
I think it was hopeful for journalists. I don't think it was super hopeful for, because a journalist isn't going to like have some robotic drone that they're going to fly from the station and go, they need to be able to see.
They will be within line of sight most part.
They would be within line of sight.
Earlier this month, NPR's Here and Now had FAA Administrator Michael Huerta on talking about drones. He was asked, aside from the legality, what does he say to people who say these rules are too complicated for people to understand? And here's his response.
For a small recreational users, it's basically a handful of things that we're asking you to do. Stay away from an airport, stay below 400 feet, maintain line of sight, and don't do anything stupid. Now, if you want to do high-performance commercial activities, yes, it's a little more complicated, but we have many tracks that we're operating on right now. We have a rulemaking that's underway that we want to complete this spring that will lay out for a very large class of users what the regulatory requirements and framework are for you to operate. And what they're going to find is it's nowhere near as complicated as doing it with regular aircraft.
So we haven't really seen these rules because they aren't in place yet, but is what he is talking about, does that sound reasonable to you?
Yeah, that sounds pretty accurate to what my expectation is after having read. And the actual recommendations are, it's a long document, and I've read through the whole thing, and it doesn't sound as complicated as a lot of people make it think. But the current situation is complicated. If you want to fly a drone for commercial purposes now, you're going to have to get a lawyer. And you have to know in advance when you're going to fly it, where you're going to fly it, what you're going to be doing, because and you have to make that request. And at some point, it was a 5-month turnaround. So that's completely useless for news. I think they've got it down to around a 24-hour turnaround, but still, for spot news, completely useless.
So once these rules are implemented, you think journalists will finally get the green light they've been looking for, and this will, if you'll pardon the pun, really take off?
Yeah, I think that's a good possibility. And that's why a lot of my focus is on trying to get students trained to be able to go out and use these things, because when the regulations do come through and places can actually legally use these, there's going to be job openings for people who know how to operate them.
So what do you expect to be teaching people, assuming the rules are going to be kind of like what you think they might wind up being, or maybe what you hope they'll wind up being? What will you teach people to do?
Well, there's a ton of just different things that you need to learn. You need to learn the rules and regulations, but the actual physical hand-eye coordination of being able to fly a drone without running into a tree, that's important too. You've got to have the technical skills. Then you have to understand the compositional theory and how to get a good shot. So there's a lot that goes into this.
Drones are a form of automation. Typically in the business world, automation means job killers. Do you see this as job killing for journalists?
Absolutely not. If they maintain that line of sight thing, because there has to be an operator. It might be a job killer for helicopter pilots in many cases, because it's so much more expensive to maintain a helicopter, pay the insurance, and to pay the pilot, as well as a photographer.
When I think of helicopter use in journalism, primarily I think of traffic control. You get a lot of traffic updates. Mm-hmm. You see the emergency chases from California on the cable TV shows all the time. Will drones replace helicopters for that use, do you think?
I don't know if they will, but I have an inclination that maybe they should. I mean, you see how many helicopter crashes there are, you know, news people who just, you get three stations out there trying to cover the same event, and the pilots end up running into each other and crashing. That's scary. You know, people die when they do that. You get a couple drones crashing into each other, they're going to fall. You know, I'm talking about the kind of drones that journalists would use, which are under 5 pounds. No damage. You know, I mean, someone might get a bruise if it lands on their head.
What did you learn about documentary filmmaking while undertaking this venture? And I know this was part of an advanced degree work at Illinois State University for you, but what did you learn about making a documentary?
Yeah, it was an interesting process, not very much different than news, which is what I'd been doing for the, you know, past couple decades, but longer, and added things like trying to write the music and record the music and put everything together in a much longer form storyline. But it was a pretty similar process to news, just more expanded.
Bob Carroll is production coordinator for Illinois State University's TV10 and the producer of the documentary called God's Eye News, The Use of Drones in Journalism. It's being screened tonight at the Normal Theater. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Willis.
I'm Willis Kern.